Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we have with us Armin Mazzani, the mayor of the city of Keller. It's great to have you back, Mr. Mayor.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Last year was like Jon Snow's first year as head of the North watching Game of Thrones. We had pandemic, Snowmageddon, and this was all within about like 2 weeks of talking to you last time. How did the rest of 2021 go for you? Because it was about March, April when we last sat down and talked together.
Yeah, no, you're right. We met, 10 months ago, and luckily now we're well past that moment. Since then, we've done a lot. From a City of Keller's perspective, we've passed a budget, which was my first budget as mayor for the City of Keller. And it was a budget that, in many ways, was very historic and monumental for our city. Early on in the year, soon after we met, we got together as a council and started discussing about what is the vision for the city moving forward, not just next year, but what are we going to be 5, 10, 15 years from now? And the vision that we had set forth was, what can we do to be the most family-friendly city in the entire state of Texas? And many people kind of looked at us when we said that early on and said, well, you mean Tarrant County? And we looked back at them and said, no, we mean the entire state. Because I think that's that type of vision and goal that you need to set as a city to really try to take your city to that next level. And so it was a very ambitious goal. And we knew that for us to get there, we had to tackle a lot of the things that we come to expect as residents. You know, property taxes, ensuring public safety, the amenities that cities provide, like our trails and our park system. But we also had to start addressing things that maybe we haven't had in the past. Things like a youth mentorship program or, you know, destigmatizing mental health. And we know that if we can tackle those type of issues along with the ones that we're tasked to tackle when we get elected, we felt that that could be how we took the city to the next step. And so we're very fortunate. We work very hard. We've got a great staff here at the city level. We've got a great council that works together. We don't always agree on things, but You don't want agreement 100% of the time. You want to be able to kind of debate and articulate different ideas. And so we were recognized by Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne in D.C. in the nation's capital as the most family-friendly city. And the reason is we passed a budget that was historic in the sense of tax relief, the largest tax relief effort in the city of Keller, where we not only maintain the tax rate below the effective rate, but we also increased the homestead exemption to the state max, which is 20%. And so what that means from a homeowner's perspective, if you own a home, let's just say on average $500,000, you're going to be taxed from the city side. You're going to be assessed an evaluation of $400,000. So that was a big relief for a lot of homeowners here in the city of Keller. And again, the largest tax relief effort we've ever provided in our city's history. When we talk about infrastructure and making sure that we're providing for adequate sidewalks and streets, again, historic in the sense that we've allocated $3.5 million towards sidewalk repairs, the largest investment ever towards repairs. And in fact, it's going to clear our city's backlog of sidewalk repairs, which was a six-year backlog. We're also allocating $3.6 million towards street repairs. And when we talk about public safety, you know, Keller's always been one of the safest communities in the entire state. And the reason is because we have residents that support our police and fire. And we've reinstituted a mechanism that voters passed overwhelmingly, 80%, where a portion of our sales tax dollars go strictly for police expenditures, whether it be tools, equipment. And so because of those things, we were recognized and we're very proud now to be the most family-friendly city in the entire state. And there's a lot of things that we're working along the ways with our parks and our trails. We're looking at the Keller Sports Park, looking at making improvements out there. But just like any environment, just like here, you know, when you've got good folks around you, when you've got a good team, it makes your job easier. And now as mayor, that's the next step is what can we do to remain the most family-friendly city and lead the team that we have before us.
Yeah, I think, the last time you were on, you spoke about medium and long-term visions, and we spoke about the dangers, obviously, of somebody who comes into office who has kind of ulterior views that some of those things never make the progress they should or get put on the back burner or cancelled altogether. But, you know, a lot of people will be listening to this podcast thinking, well, the problems, or rather problems in parentheses, you know, in your city are very different to the problems I may have in my city. But I think people have a misconception that just because the city is doing well, that there's no pressure on the elected officials. Right. It's like people think, oh, if you're in charge of a winning team, that's an easy life as a coach. But there is still pressure on you, even when things are running well, because people still have that expectation. They want things to be better. Now, you're very public-minded in terms of your interaction. I see that across your social media. You take a lot of questions. You put yourself out there. Are we in danger of perhaps focusing on a few too many things which are a little bit kind of trivial just to kind of be appeasing a growing population in Keller? Or do you think people will be patient and buy into some of these longer projects?
I think we've got residents that are patient and have bought in into the idea that we know, again, it just, these things don't happen overnight. You know, when we talk about, for example, the sports park, you know, just an example, that's a long-term project, but the planning is happening now. But we know that for us to make the improvements that we need to make, it's going to be in phases. And so one of the things that we did, and as an example there, we created a task force, a group of people that came together and kind of thought of the big picture concept plan, and they were comprised of youth association presidents. So all the presidents that currently have associations within the sports park were part of this task force. And the reason I think that was so important is because you got buy-in from all the different stakeholders. And not everybody got what they want. We're still, and when I say, you know, got what they want, we're still working. You know, we still have to go through the city council and planning and zoning and parks and rec board and things like that. But they knew that we've got a budget, we've got to stick to a budget, and we may not get, you know, everybody's wish list. But at the end of the day, we're going to get a project that's going to be, in my opinion, the premier sports park in the entire Metroplex. But there's buy-in because we brought folks early on. Folks were part of that conversation. Same thing when we talk about our taxes and the things that we've done with the tax relief and the infrastructure, it was buy-in. You know, the reason we did those things is because we had residents. Really, this was a reaction to what residents have been telling us for a long time to do. And I think when you have buy-in from that sense, it's why you're able to, you know, people will understand the bigger picture and give us time to complete that task. Things don't happen overnight, but I would say in Keller, and maybe it's unique to other cities, we've got residents that are very understanding of what the long-term vision is and what it takes for us to get there.
Right. So not all that long ago, you hosted the governor at a church. So I'm kind of curious, as a like city council mayor, you know, mayor slash city council, did you have to do any prep for that? Did you say, you know, hey, city councilman, you got to be in charge of taking out the garbage and everything. We got the big boss man coming. You know, what was the prep like, you know, for hosting the mayor or for hosting the governor?
Yeah, No. So the first time the governor, sitting governor, has ever visited the city of Keller. And so for us, it was a big thing, a big deal. And how that kind of really began, I a couple of years ago co-founded what's called the Keller Republican Club. And we know that, you know, local politics are not supposed to be partisan in nature, but at the end of the day, people have their certain values and beliefs and that type of thing. And so the reason we started a Republican club was we wanted to bring in speakers just like the governor, who would come to Keller and talk about what it is that they do, what their, you know, what their plan and vision is moving forward, and really kind of create a sense of engagement within our community. And so we tell people, you know, there's no membership, there's no, you know, you don't need to pledge allegiance to this party or the other, but if you want to hear about the issues that are happening not only at the local level, but at the state level as well, come and join us. And we meet once every 2 months. And so since then, obviously, like you indicated, we've brought the governor in, which was a great event. Over 500 people attended at Venture Church. Venture Church opened up their doors for that. But that was a process where we had reached out to the governor and his team, and it wasn't until a couple months later where they came back and said, hey, the governor would love to come to Keller. And so it took a little bit of an effort in finding a venue. Again, Venture Church was great in that. But then coordinating with his team, and there's a public safety component too. So, you know, our police department got involved, the governor's security team got involved, the Texas Rangers got involved. And I don't know if you had a chance to attend it, but it was a tremendous success in the sense that there was no issue that came about. The governor came in at 7 o'clock, didn't leave till about 9:15. And if you look at the governor's campaign stops, he'll speak for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then obviously he's got to go to the next event. And what was really cool about this event that we had here in Keller, he stayed there till the very end. And if everybody wanted to take a picture, he stayed there till the last person. And that was pretty, you know, I think that's a testament to him and his team, but it was pretty cool to have the governor of your state, which is the ninth largest economy in the entire world, be here in Keller. And he got to know a little bit of what we're doing as a city and the type of people that we have. So it was a great event.
Yeah. And you mentioned, because I tried to look this up, but it was kind of difficult to figure out. But that's the first time that any governor has visited Keller, correct?
Right. Yeah. Right.
I mean, you would have thought somebody would have shown up by now, right? It's not like Keller's a brand new town.
Right.
It's just kind of weird that it took that long for somebody to actually invite the dude down and say, hey, you know,
yeah,
come pay us a visit. You know, we are one of your towns.
Well, I think, you know, there's obviously areas of Texas which need a little bit more maintenance, you know, than Keller. Keller's pretty good in terms of, you know, we've always traditionally done a great job with our budgets, and we've had money to be able to allocate to, you know, put fires out. But, you know, there are a lot of counties in Texas which, you know, aren't in that luxurious position, and the cities within them have got a whole range of different issues, even though we're within the same state, which kind of brings me on to my next question. The political landscape within Texas is obviously changing because of three different aspects. You have an influx of people from other states suddenly coming in, which started picking up before COVID-19, but certainly over the last year, it's accelerated.
Right.
When we had somebody from California move in right next door to us, and the first thing they did was paint the whole house white.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Now,
why do people from California want to paint their houses white?
Now, I'll be honest
white?
With you.
Have you noticed that, though? Yeah. I mean, it's like, like you say, the guy that moved in across the street from my dad, first thing they did was paint the house white.
It's less easy to spot on Google Earth, though. I've noticed that. I flew over it with Flight Simulator and kind of like, all right, you know, probably escape a drone strike. But, yeah, we've got, you know, an influx of people from, you know, the coasts. And, you know, the southern border is always an issue with, you know, a steady stream, regardless of the legality of people coming in. We still have that issue. But also we have a changing youth dynamic in terms of politics. Now kids are being targeted a lot earlier because their votes are being harvested at an early age to try and, you know, bring in influence. So with the political landscape of Texas changing, how do we, especially in an area like Keller, hold on to our old traditional values, but still accommodate, I guess, a change in demographic, people who have slightly different beliefs and expectations? How do we accommodate them without being like, well, look, you come here, you do things our way.
Right.
You know, you leave all that garbage you left behind. You know, how are we going to accommodate, you know, this continual influx of people?
Yeah. Well, to your point, I think the number is 300 people are moving in to not just the state, but to DFW every day. And so a lot of people, obviously, in cities like Keller, we're growing, and it's from all over the place. It's not just, you know, California, but we got a lot of people from Illinois, New York, like you said, the coast. But they're just coming here because of the opportunities that the state provides. And I think one of the ways that we do some of the things and address some of those concerns that you raised is, you remind folks of why they came here in the first place. You know, people are coming here because of those opportunities, because of the jobs. And I think the state has created an environment that allows for those things to happen. Unlike states like, for example, California, you know, where a lot of people are actually migrating out of that state. You know, we're, as a state in Texas, we're very unique in that sense. And so we got to remind people that you came here because of less regulations. You came here because of, you know, in comparison, you know, you're not, there's no income tax, for example, you're paying less in taxes. Although our property taxes are high, I think it's responsibilities for local municipalities and other taxing entities to do what we can to lower that dependency on homeowners. But for the most part, this is a very free and you know, state that provides a lot of opportunity. So for me, it's reminding people. And how we do it at a local level, you know, at the end of the day, you know, as a mayor, you know, I'm Republican, but, you know, when you talk about potholes and when you talk about trails and we talk about ensuring public safety, really, those shouldn't be red or blue type issues. Those are issues that impact everybody, impact all our neighbors. And so from my perspective is that's my role. It's to make sure that I'm addressing all the needs that our residents have talked to us about and do it to the best of our ability, because everybody wants to pay less in taxes. Everybody wants safe streets. Everybody wants great education. Everybody wants trails and parks and those type of things. And so for us is we focus on that. And yet in the broader picture, in the broader sense, remind people of why they came to Texas in the first place.
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you see adding or that you could add, not you personally, but the city of Keller add that maybe would have been kind of a pipe dream 10, 20 years ago? You know, we talked about the sports park, right, and redoing that. And you still got some land around. What is that one thing that if you had that rubber stamp, you could say, I'm going to install this into the city of Keller, you know, tomorrow?
Well, the sports park is a big deal. Because you're right. I mean, that's been discussed for, I remember I got on council in 2014, 2015, and that was kind of a pie in the sky type of vision. And the reason being is because it's going to take a large sum of money for us to really make improvements to that sports park, and really to the tune of probably $20 to $25 million. So when you say that, people kind of, well, wait a second, that's a lot of money, which it is. But the cool thing about our city and our residents is we actually have a mechanism through sales tax dollar. It's, you know, a certain percentage of sales tax dollars can only be used and allocated for park purposes. And so it's not like we could just take that money and just hoard it and just store it aside. You need to use that money, which voters voted for again, park purposes. And so what's going to happen now, and the reason we're able to tackle this issue is, we've got some debt that's falling off from that particular fund that's going to fall off in about a year. And so what that means is that we'll be able to incur an additional obligation without having to raise taxes or without having to jeopardize other things that we come to expect. It's all going to be paid solely from that fund that comes from our sales tax dollars, which voters instituted. And so it's why we're able now to address the sports park. You know, another thing is, you know, the commercial corridor along 377. You know, if we could just say, wouldn't it be great to have this just right now? But 377 going along towards Westlake from Old Town to Westlake is a big commercial corridor for the city. And when we talk about what can we do to generate more sales tax dollars or reduce the dependency on homeowners, one way you do that is by bringing good, sound business economic development to the area. And so what we've actually done this last year as a council was created a TIF. A tax increment refinance zone. And so ultimately what that means is as new valuations go up in that area that we've drawn, which happens to be that 377 that we've drawn, as new valuations go up and increase a certain percentage, up to 50% of that, new money must go back towards infrastructure improvements for that same area that you've drawn. And so the reason you do that is, one, it's a commitment from the city saying, hey, we want this corridor to be vibrant and we want to create new infrastructure improvements to that area. But you also do that because you get tax dollars from the county and the other entities that get involved. And so it's a way for us as a city to not just put that burden solely on us, but to get some, you know, and it's going to be millions of dollars that will come from the county and the other entities. And so that cost share model, I think, is going to be important for us moving forward. And that's another area that, aside from the sports park, I think it's all interrelated, but it's that whole commercial corridor as well.
Yeah. So could you picture then, like, say, you know, north of Johnson Road, all of that eventually turning into commercial?
Yeah. I mean, it's zoned that way. It's intended to be commercial retail. And so, for example, there's a development that was approved prior to me being as mayor, but was approved that's called Center Stage. And so that's going to be a mixed use type of development where it's going to have retail, it's going to have some single-family homes, and it will also have apartment-style dwellings. And that's going to be right on that border of that Keller-Westlake area. And so the reason why that might have a good opportunity, and I think it will have a good opportunity of being successful, is if you consider Keller, you know, one of the challenges that we've had as a city in trying to attract new business development is that we don't have the traffic impact or the traffic numbers to support some of the businesses that we all want to come to the city. We've done a good job of bringing and still recruiting those top businesses because we have, on average, you know, families in Keller make a good amount of money. And so if you're a business owner, you know that, you understand that. You understand that within a 5-mile radius, there is the numbers to support your business. But what's unique about this center stage development, the one that we're talking about, it's right along 114. And so it's from an accessibility perspective and from other folks from surrounding cities coming to and enjoying those establishments, I think it's going to offer the city some unique opportunities to do some and attract some different type of retail establishments to the area.
So one business that honestly, in growing up around here, I was utterly shocked to see was Keller's First Liquor Store.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Keller growing up. I mean, it was a dry city in a dry county, and you could go to Judge Beans and get the little Unicard, right. And then that's the way you could actually have a beer. And then, of course, you know, the argument was always, well, if you're ever going to get good restaurants into Keller, you're going to have to allow them to serve beer and wine and liquor and all that. So it eventually passed, and now, I mean, there's liquor stores popping up in Keller. What kind of pushback did, you know, the city council or whatever kind of receive as far as, you know, we don't want liquor stores here in Keller? Or was it more, yeah, we got to get liquor stores into town?
Yeah. So it went to the voters, and I want to say it was close to 70-75% of voters voted for the allowance of liquor stores. But one of the things that as a council, and it's one of the things that I've talked about since getting on, because this happened prior to me becoming mayor, was we also don't want just liquor stores, to your point, just popping out in every corner. And so any liquor store, any liquor establishment that wants to come to the city must come before the city council, and which to me, in my mind, that means they must come to the residents for approval. We, the city council, essentially obviously representing, you know, the broader population. And so I think having that mechanism in place assures us that we're not going to have liquor stores at every corner. One of the things that I know from at least this council that we've talked about, we've got Specs that opened up, and then we've got a Goody Goodies that will be opening in that 377 commercial corridor. And one of the things that we talked about when we approved the Goody Goody was this is probably going to be the last liquor store that this council will approve. Now, I can't speak to councils 10 years down the line, but at least from my perspective, I don't intend on supporting any additional liquor stores to the area, because I think we've got that number. We've got the one in Specs, which is along 1709, and now we've got the one over here in 377. I think that's met its purpose. And so at least from my perspective, I wouldn't see myself approving anymore or voting to approve anymore. But I can't guarantee what happens 10 years from now with future councils. But the nice thing is that they must come through what's called a specific use permit, which means they must go through planning and zoning and ultimately get approved by council.
Yeah, there comes a point where I think somebody considering that 5 minutes is too far to drive to the closest liquor store is pretty low down on the priorities. But I remember last year we spoke about Snowmageddon, and it was still pretty fresh in our minds, and we still had PTSD from it. And, you know, we spoke about probably some of the protocols we could have put in place to have prevented that. And we looked at it and try to figure out what went wrong, what services failed, how it could have been better handled. But now we're a year further on, and before the show started today, we talked about the possibility of winter weather coming in the middle of this week, which in previous years would have been a little bit of a joke here in Texas. But remembering last year, and, you know, you've recently met with the governor, what is in place now to make sure that doesn't happen again? I know we had the discussion a year ago, but obviously we've had a year to look back, see how things could have been changed, handled differently.
Yeah.
What do we have in place now to ensure Keller doesn't go through the fourth ice age again?
Yeah, so obviously now that the winter storm's coming back, or the we got cold temperatures coming, it's kind of everybody's a little bit up in arms, like, wait, is this going to happen again? The good news is I had a chance to speak with Fire Chief this morning, in fact, as we're kind of getting in ready in anticipation of. And the good news is it doesn't appear like this one's going to be nowhere near as bad as what we had. It's going to be a 1 or 2 day type event, and so not much snow will stick. The biggest question is the ice component. And ice in Texas, as you guys seen, that's always been the biggest issue. From a state perspective, I know that what the governor and what the legislature did is, first off, the board that made up the entity that kind of oversaw everything, a lot of them lived out of state. Well, that's changed. They passed legislation where now every member of that board actually lives in the state. And the reason that's important is, frankly, when we had the ice storm and the snowstorm last year, a lot of the folks that sit on that board that makes those decisions were not here to experience it. And so maybe that created a lack of urgency in some ways. And so that's changed. The other thing that the legislature passed in Austin was the winterization of a lot of these facilities and equipments, making that a requirement. And I was at a Zoom conference a week ago where they were talking about this, and my understanding is close to 95% of these facilities have actually gone through that winterization process, which is good news. That means that we should be able to sustain a winter storm like we had last year. And the reality is, you know, we were not winterizing our equipment and the facilities, you know, prior to what we all went through. And then from a city of Keller perspective, we always continue to monitor things. But for example, like this week, we're getting ready just in the event that we have to. So what does that mean for us? It means, you know, making sure that we have salt for the roads. And if that becomes an issue and if it becomes necessary, making sure that all our, whether it be our fire trucks or ambulances, that they're gassed up, ready to go, that they're, you know, in fine shape for the winter weather. And ultimately, because we've gone through those type of stages, I'm confident that in the event, let's just say we had another one this year, like to your point, I was mayor for maybe a month and a half when all this happened. And so there's a lot of things that get thrown at you and you kind of have to learn. Well, now I understand that, you know, for example, if we need to request water from the federal government, there's ways that we can do that. And I knew that back then, obviously staff will, but now you kind of prepare for things ahead of time, and which is what we're doing this week. And so I think with the actions that Austin has taken, that the legislators and the governor, they've taken, I think we're better suited. And I think from the city's perspective, myself, including staff and our residents, we're all very much more well prepared.
Were you a bit annoyed last year? Because a lot of mayors get into office and have, you know, a pretty nice time. But last year, instead of like getting to decide, okay, 377, we're going to put in a new restaurant. Is it going to be chicken? Is it going to be pizza? But instead, you have to deal with one of the harshest Texas storms in history and the worst pandemic in 100 years. Did you feel a little bit aggrieved that, like, you were, you know?
It's like you picked the wrong time to run for mayor.
No, you know, it's funny. So Mayor Pat's a good friend, Pat McGrill, who was a former mayor. And I joke around with him often when I see him. And I said, now I get it. Now there's a reason why you were trying to get out of the office so quick, and you must have known about that winter storm that was coming. And he just kind of starts laughing. But no, honestly, from my perspective, obviously first of all, when you sign up for the job, I think you have to be understanding that things will happen, and you have to be confident in the sense that you can address those type of issues. So to me, that sense was never lost on me. But obviously, this was something that it was historic in nature. Not many cities have kind of gone through. And so ultimately, I view that experience as something that prepared me for future incidents that may come before the city that you just can't anticipate for. And I think it's made me a better leader, and it's made our council more effective. You know, we're able now, if we know that we can tackle issues like what we went through last year, we feel confident we can tackle issues moving forward. So I viewed it as a learning experience. Obviously, you knock on wood, it doesn't happen again, and you don't have to go through that, because a lot of people suffered, not just, you know, in Keller, but throughout the entire state. People lost power, people didn't have food and things like that. And so, but it was a learning experience, and really it was eye-opening to see the sense of community that came out of that. You know, when you saw the chamber and when you saw the nonprofits and the churches kind of get together and support the community, it was really eye-opening because Keller's always been a great community. I knew that coming into Keller. This is why I wanted to raise my family here. But when you are in the middle of something so big like that and so challenging, you really have a different, unique sense of appreciation for the people that make up your community, but also the people at town hall. You know, a lot of those folks don't live, you know, fire chiefs and all these people, they don't live in Keller. They actually live in surrounding communities, but you wouldn't have known that just based on how often, you know, they were here and how devoted they were to making sure that we addressed the issues that we were going through. So you have a unique sense of appreciation, not just for community, but also for people that make up town hall. And you have a different level of respect because you've seen them. I mean, they lost power, but they were at all those meetings that we had to hold. And so in that sense, it was eye-opening, but it was a learning opportunity.
Yeah, I do have a little bit of a recommendation, actually. The next time we get snow, we'll get in the return. A lot of people certainly reading after the event on social media and across the Nextdoor app were saying that one of the biggest problems was being able to communicate with relatives and friends because obviously with the power going out, they didn't have a way to recharge their cell phones, a lot of people. So I'm wondering if it might be helpful if we ever get a situation like that again where the churches, grocery stores can provide power strips with plug-in things that people can actually recharge their phone and get in communication. Because I think the not knowing what was going on and having to rely on hearsay and social media apps wasn't the best way. People were panicking, not sure whether there was going to be food at stores if they ventured out. And I think it would be good if we set up some kind of public communication system. We know the elected officials, the fire, and you know, police are all able to communicate very effectively during a crisis, but the public panic a little bit when they're not able to get hold of their friends or the relatives. They don't know what's happening to their grandmother five miles away. I think it would be a good idea to set up something whereby people can actually, you know, keep those channels of communication open. So that was just a suggestion, which I'd kind of read from a few different posts and stuff.
No, absolutely. And I'll say this, because there's always room for improvement, right? Moving forward, you can never be satisfied. But I will say this, the city of Keller was recognized for communication during the ice storm in the entire state. It was recognized for how we responded and how we communicated. And to your point, we actually, because we know that a lot of people went through without power and they couldn't even charge their phones, we actually opened up several warming stations. So the public library, for example, was a warming station because it didn't lose power, where people can come in, either spend the night, get water, get snacks, plug their phones, that type of thing. And so Keller was very unique in how we responded and we were recognized for it. And my hope is other cities, you know, can look at that model and a lot of nonprofits stepped up and also did those type of warming stations as well within Keller, churches and things like that. But my hope is that we're all going to learn from each other. There's a lot of things that we as a city in Keller can look to our neighbors to the east or to the west, north, south, and see it, and look at what did they do and what can we take pieces of what they did and ultimately when this happens again, because it will, at some point it's going to happen again. Can we instill those type of things that they did and those changes? And so, there's always ways for us to improve and communication. When you have something like that, that's the biggest thing. And for us, you know, I'll tell you, the other thing that we're doing is literally knocking on people's doors. You know, we had police officers checking up on seniors and just making sure that they had what they needed. And we had Milestone Church, I remember doing that, going out and delivering water to folks that needed it. So, there's ways that we can continue to improve. Should it happen again.
Now, did Keller suffer too much economically during last year? I know we kind of pushed ahead through the whole pandemic stuff. I mean, I think our response here in North Texas was, you know, very measured, very appropriate. And I think, you know, we got through a situation with everybody kind of you know, not panicking in the lifeboat in some respects. And I think we've steered our way kind of out of it. And we look at other states who are still very much probably where we were 16 months ago even.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously it did have an economic impact on the city. Some businesses were struggling, living on, you know, living from loan to loan. Some needed government assistance. But, you know, is the effect economically going to be felt for years from the coronavirus in Keller, or are we going to be able to brush that off pretty quickly?
Yeah, you know, it depends on who you ask. So, for example, from a city's perspective, because of our residents and supporting the local establishments and as much as they could, you actually saw an uprise in sales tax revenue coming into the city, which is, you know, in some regards, kind of highly unusual when you look at the broader in the entire state. But that's, I think, because we have residents who again, you know, are just as invested in this community as their neighbors and want to support these small businesses. I think if you ask some of the small businesses within Keller, you know, obviously that was a challenging time. So they may have seen rises, you know, we may have, the city may have seen rises in sales tax, but that could be because people were shopping online and you know, maybe that generated more revenue. But if you ask the, you know, the average mom and pop shop, them being closed certainly didn't help. And unfortunately, yeah, we've seen businesses that either had to relocate or maybe had to close down for, you know, a certain amount of time. COVID, obviously, you know, which is ultimately the winter storm was one thing, but COVID was the long-lasting effect of it. That's impacted these businesses as well. I think we're starting to come out of it, obviously, with the government's assistance with a lot of the loans that these, you know, these entities received. I think it helped keep these businesses afloat, but they were still impacted. And you know, the closures didn't help, for sure. But if the question is, you know, where do you see it long term, or are we coming out of it? I think we're coming out of it. I've had roundtables with business owners. I've gone to the merchants associations, have met with folks out there and that type of thing. And it seems like we're coming out of it.
Now, the president kind of threatened that states who spoke out against mandates that he would withhold federal funds from certain states. And it was something they backtracked on a little bit, and then it went quiet for a while. And now it seems to be being mentioned again that, you know, states which are not falling in line, especially now judges have shut down a lot of the private business mandates as well as the public service ones, that they still want to play with these funds. And, you know, Florida and Texas especially, because we kind of took our own lead, that, you know, threatening to withhold federal funds because you're not following, I guess, the narrative or following how the president sees this vision for the whole country. Is that something which is ever taken into account at a federal level? You're concerned about the reaction at that level, or is the concentration just purely, look, on Texas, on Keller, North Tarrant here, this is what we need to worry about. We don't need to worry about kind of threats or political differences at a federal level. We've got to focus in on what matters here. Is there any federal influence, particularly at a local level?
Yeah, no, I think certainly. You know, from my perspective, I look at what's happening, not just here locally, but I look at what's happening down in Austin and some of the things that get passed out there, and then federal level. I mean, it all trickles down. It all impacts us. It's why, for me, it's important as mayor for me to have a good relationship with our officials, whether it be in Austin or in D.C. And I actually, one of the things that I did this year when I got on was I wanted to make sure that I took a trip out to D.C. to visit with our elected congresspeople. So I had a chance to meet with Congresswoman Beth Van Dyne. I had an opportunity to meet with Congressman Michael Burgess, who also represented at that time Keller. And we talked about federal legislation impacting. We talked about, you know, we were in roundtable discussions talking about just infrastructure and what would that mean to our area. So all these things matter. And I think if we get stuck as elected officials at the local level, if we get just stuck with looking at our issues and not worrying about what's happening here and there, then I think you're doing a disservice to your community, because to me, it all impacts, it all trickles up, trickles down, however you want to say it. So,
what do you think the best kept secret in Keller is? Like that one thing that, you know, nobody thinks about, or you have that, oh yeah, I forgot all about that. That, you know, maybe let's pretend for a minute you're a realtor, right? And you know, you are trying to talk somebody into moving to Keller, and it's something that they just don't see all over Facebook or all over the City of Keller's website or some realtor guide. What is that best kept secret in Keller that people really need to know about?
Well, to me,
and you don't have to limit it to just one thing.
Okay. Yeah. No, to me, I think it's that whole theme that we talked about, being family friendly. I think we're a city that, no matter whether you're someone with no kids and, you know, just young out of college and looking to raise a family, or if you're the eldest of our seniors, we're a community that, in my opinion, offers something for everybody. And as an example, this past weekend, we opened up a Keller Senior Activity Center. It's going to be, it's a 21,000 square foot facility, brand new. Today's actually the first day that it opened up to the general public. And in my opinion, it's the premier senior center in the entire complex.
We'll have to give that a visit in 10 years.
Yeah, well, yeah.
10 years for you, but 20 years for me.
No, but honestly, you know, and so the programming and the events that seniors will be able to do out there, because again, you can't have a family-friendly city without addressing your broad population. And so to me, that's Keller, and that's what makes us unique. If I were a realtor and bringing in someone and telling them why they should go to Keller, it's we've got 26 miles of trail, which is unique to the Metroplex. We've got a great school district. We've got one of the safest communities, not just the entire state, but in the entire nation for a city our size. And we have, I think, what's a vibrant economic development plan moving forward and a lot of existing businesses that create that vibrancy. So we're very unique. It's a bedroom community, but we still have the amenities that we come to expect in a 21st century. And the proximity of the airport, but not having to deal with the traffic like maybe some of the surrounding cities do, I think is unique. And so to me, this is a perfect place to raise a family and ultimately retire if once you get to that point.
Now, what do you think the biggest threats are to Keller? And by threats, I don't mean something somebody should be panicking about, selling their life savings and buying Bitcoin. But, you know, are there any, I guess, medium, long-term threats to infrastructure or quality of education, I guess, because of the expansion in population of the area in Keller, but also some kind of gray areas where we're not sure where funding might be 5 years or 10 years down the line. You look at a long-term project like over this side of town, North Fort Worth, with I-35, which, you know, it's been going, what now, 25 years they've been working on this section?
Ever since I've been alive.
Right, yeah. And, you know, we hear the excuses, it's funding, it's because things keep changing, but, you know, obviously we have to be careful about getting involved in projects which end up like the circus right. It's been this side of town in North Fort Worth. But are there any kind of threats and visions and plans you have where you can see that, you know, this might be pretty tricky to get this through and keep this momentum going to finish this project if things get changed? I mean, the national kind of build back better infrastructure bills and giving money to state governments, they seem to be very contingent upon specific things. People think, oh, the government's going to give our state money to repair roads and bridges, but all of those funds are very contingent upon a lot of things which right. We might not necessarily want to fulfill to right. Be able to get access to that money.
Yeah.
So do you feel that, well, I mean, like I phrased the question to begin with, there were any threats kind of lying where we have to tread carefully and, you know, perhaps be a little bit fiscally responsible with the purse strings as, you know, Keller expands and, you know, we've got a much bigger project on our hands than right. Originally we started with.
Yeah. I don't view it as threats, but, you know, these are, in my mind, they're challenges. And so how you navigate around that is important. So, yeah, I mean, federal legislation that, you know, provides this, but, you know, there are strings involved, and if you want this, you need to do that. Those type of things, you have to be cautious. I see them as mandates, unfunded mandates sometimes, you know, that sometimes comes from the legislature in Austin. And so we also always have to be cautious as a city, and that's why, to me, it's important that we stay aware of what's happening, what bills are being passed, and how does that impact communities like Keller. I think in the immediate term, we talked about earlier on so many people moving to Texas and specifically DFW and Keller being one of them. You know, for example, Charles Schwab opening in Westlake, what does that mean? It means that it's going to be thousands of people coming to Texas and into this, you know, corner, and they'll be looking at Keller. And so in my mind, what is ultimately that may impact, for example, you know, public safety. Does that mean that as a police department that we need to expand and make sure that we bring in more personnel? Same thing with fire, you know, because the more people you have within your city, then you want to ensure that your response times are adequate and that they are where they need to be. Keller, knock on wood, we've again, you know, one of the premier police and fire stations in the entire state. The accreditations that we receive are second to none. And so I'm not just saying it. It's, you look at our, you know, how we're accredited and the awards that we obtain, but making sure that we sustain that and continue that as you get new people coming in is important. It's why, in fact, you know, we're actively as a city, we are under a study with Westlake about possibly merging fire departments. And one of the thoughts and one of the kind of the reasons why we want to look at that and explore that is, first off, Keller and Westlake already have a partnership with our police department. We actually patrol Westlake. Westlake pays a certain amount to the city of Keller for us to do that. That partnership has been very important for both communities because it's been a funding source for us, but it's also been obviously a public safety component for them. Fire, the same thing. We have partnerships with surrounding cities, but, you know, for example, Keller, where you see some of the growth now is kind of on that north commercial corridor. We talked about center stage early on. And the same thing with Westlake. Right on that border is Charles Schwab. And so they've got a increasing commercial base that's happening in Westlake. And so when we came into the study, the first question was, will it improve response times? We haven't obtained the report yet. We're supposed to be receiving it pretty soon. Maybe in the next couple of weeks or in 1 month, we'll obtain a report. But from what I'm hearing is by us acting as a merged entity with our fire station, it sounds like our public response times have improved, which is good. You never want to consider a merger if public response times are going to go the opposite direction. It sounds like it's gone the right direction. But then the second component to that is, you know, long term, to your question, what does it mean if we were to merge entities? Well, it could possibly mean a cost share opportunity where if we wanted to add a fourth fire station, well, Keller and Keller taxpayers wouldn't take the sole brunt of that. It would be shared with Westlake. Same thing with the staffing that goes within that fire department or a fire station. And so those are the type of things that we are constantly looking at because we understand that people are going to move to the Metroplex. People are going to look at Keller for all the good things that we talked about. And so how we react to that, and in this particular case, public safety, making sure that our response times across the board are as good as they are or improve is a step that we must take. And that's why we started looking at this potential merger. But again, you know, we're going to obtain the report. We'll review the response times. We'll have to come to agreement with who pays that, who pays what, and how much, and that type of thing. But that could be a way for us to address some of the concerns and some of the influx of people coming in.
Now, you know, talking about emergency response times made me remember, what was it, about a month or so ago, maybe not even that long ago, the hostage situation over in Colleyville.
Yeah.
At the synagogue. I'm sure, you know, you're sitting there when that happened saying, well, it's a good thing that didn't happen in Keller because I don't want that to happen in my town. But if it did, do you feel like we'd be ready, that Keller would be ready for some kind of a issue like that?
Yeah.
With that emergency response?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, it's, you know, prayers were answered because no one was injured out of that. And to me, that's a direct correlation of the public safety teams that went to and assessed that and handled it. And it was from local to state to, you know, the FBI obviously got involved and a team from Virginia flew in. I will tell you, we talked about mergers and, you know, and why regional partnerships sometimes are so important. We have a regional SWAT team in this Metroplex. And in fact, the co-commander for that regional SWAT team is actually one of the captains here in Keller. And so to answer your question directly, obviously, that's something that, you know, you never want in your city. Do we have the professionals and the resources to do what happened in Colleyville? And if it were to happen, I think we do. We've got the people that went out to Colleyville. Again, some of them were from Keller. And so the training that they receive and all that, that regionalization is so important. And in fact, it was the regional SWAT team that really were able to obtain the information they needed that kept the situation where it had to stay, where then you got the state officials and the federal public safety officials. They came in and at that point were able to kind of take over. But if you don't have a good local team or regional team to begin with, then that situation could have been much worse than what it was. But because of them and how professional they are and the training they receive, they were able to maintain that and wait for the other folks to come in. So that was a collaboration, a partnership amongst all the different entities that could have gone much worse, and it didn't. And it's because of the training that all these folks receive. And I know Mayor Richard Newton very well on Colleyville, and I know that their department is a great police department as well, and they were the first ones to get to the scene, and you know, credit to them as well. I think leadership matters at all levels, and in that case, it wasn't just local, but it was the state and then the FBI as well.
Yeah, I felt, you know, the national eyes were on us for about a day or so with that situation, because there were a lot of political divisive components in that situation which could have gone in terrible directions. You know, we're already living in a society where the effectiveness and motivation behind police forces are questioned. I mean, in
right.
Texas, generally speaking, we have great respect for our police officers and, you know, fire departments and stuff. And so we don't suffer from a lot of defund the police type cries and, right. you know, a lot of cities and states have to deal with. But there was an opportunity that could have gone very, very wrong. And we have been in the news for, you know, all the wrong reasons, but it was handled nigh on perfectly. It was quite funny reading on social media some of the responses from people in other states being like, he's chosen the wrong place to
start
taking hostages. You know, this isn't Oregon. You know, you're not going to be walking out of here, getting in a lift to the airport. You know, you're not going to get out of this. But I felt everything was dealt with in terms of the communication, the way the police handled it. I think we controlled the chatter very well. I mean, like I said, politically, that could have gone in some very bad directions just simply because, you know, the parties involved. But I think it was dealt with excellently at a local level. I mean, I read criticism on some aspects on a national level, but that's because they had their own agendas in terms of how they deal with those type of situations. But I felt very confident, and I think a lot of people felt very confident afterwards that, you know, the preparedness, the reaction and everything was top notch. I don't think that could have ended up any better. You know, that's feels terrible saying that, but well, it couldn't have ended any better.
It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it.
Absolutely. And yeah, the fact that, you know, none of the hostages were injured, I mean, that absolutely, that was a tremendous success. And to your point, it's you've got a population here in Texas and in the Metroplex that understand, you know, why it's so important to support our police and fire. And that's why we talked about earlier about Keller reinstituting a mechanism of how we fund our police through our sales tax revenue. And voters overwhelmingly approved that this past year by margin of 82-83% in approval for making sure that our police were funded where they can, you know, receive the most up-to-date tools and equipment and training. And that's all very important. And if it weren't for residents here in Keller or in the Metroplex that understood why that's so important, you know, situations like that one that we just talked about could have been much worse. So to me, we talk about how does that all interrelate? And it's, to me, it starts with values and the people that make up your community. And when you have communities that support the police and fire, data shows that those communities are going to tend to do well and be safe.
Yeah. Now, with the relative proximity of the southern border, do we suffer much from issues such as fentanyl and stuff in, you know, kind of like North Tarrant County? Because we don't read a ton about it. Every now and then you'll see an article about, you know, it's the lead cause of death, you know, in like under 40s adults now.
Yeah.
Bypassing cancer, heart disease, and obviously medical malpractice. If you're under 40 years old as an adult, you have more chance overdosing on, you know, prescription pills or illegally obtained drugs. Do we have a big problem in
the entire state? For sure we do. You know, that I know the governor's been talking about the fentanyl issue, and same thing with our county sheriff. You know, that's been a big issue on Sheriff Wayburn's mind, so all those issues, I mean, they impact communities. And for us to say, well, Keller doesn't have to worry about those type of issues because either they happen at the border, or to me, that's just a wrong mentality. It happens everywhere. Every community has to deal with these type of issues, and our youth are being exposed to some of these things. And so from a police department, we've had conversations with our chief of police, and that's why we've tried to institute programs where, whether it be youth mentorships or, you know, the police chief has an advisory council as well made up of youth. And to me, all those type of relationships and programs that you put in place are so important, but they impact all communities in the entire state. You know, human trafficking, for example, is another issue that just because it happens at our border, you know, with all the crossings and what's going on and that type of thing, for people to assume, well, it can't happen here because Keller's this beautiful, great community and it just doesn't happen here. To me, that's a false thinking.
All right. Now, I did actually have a question I wanted to put you on the spot. So forget 2021 and how rough that kind of started. You're playing Dungeons and Dragons, you roll a 13, you wake up tomorrow morning, you're now mayor of New York.
This is what I get for going over here and messing with the board. All of a sudden you're talking about Dungeons and Dragons.
I thought I could sneak in a few questions under the radar. But if you woke up tomorrow morning, you're mayor of New York City, where do you start?
I'd hope it was just a dream, first of all. But if it's not a dream and you're mayor of a city like that, I think, you know, addressing the public safety component. You know, cities like New York and Chicago, you're seeing spikes and frankly, even cities like Dallas, you're seeing spikes in crime. And so to me, the first thing you need to address is public safety. That is the number one. At the end of the day, that is the number one. It should be the number one priority for local municipalities is ensuring the public safety of your residents. And so making sure that our police and fire don't get defunded and that they have the adequate resources they need is priority number one. The next step would be, you know, New York obviously has a lot of infrastructure and you know, repairs that need to happen. I've been there before and you see these type of things. And so to me, ultimately is shifting the focus of government to the core functions of government, you know, and that's actually something that we've talked about in Keller is not getting sidetracked with things that maybe are outside of our wheelhouse, but just focusing on the core functions, making sure that we're safe, making sure that we've got adequate streets and sidewalks, making sure that, you know, we create an environment that is less regulation, more opportunistic for businesses to come in, because when you do that, you help taxpayers. And so for us, those are the type of things we focus here. And so I think any mayor, any city, especially the bigger cities, you got to shift your focus on those type of things and maybe focus less on the politics that sometimes you see elected leaders kind of tend to. So
last question for you. What's the biggest perk of being the mayor that maybe nobody knows about? Like, you know, you get 50% off meals on Sunday or something like that. Yeah. So it being the mayor of the city of Keller, what's that favorite perk of yours that you've got?
Well,
if you have one.
Yeah, I mean, well, being able to serve really your community, to me, that honestly, I know it sounds cheesy, but to me, it really is an absolute privilege, because being able to have an impact on a day-to-day basis, I think being mayor more so than, you know, any other position, whether it be Congress or whatever, you know, if there's a pothole, you know that you can address that pothole in a fairly quick time, maybe the next day. Whereas if you're in Congress, you have to go through all the hoops and hurdles and you have to, you know, are you in the minority? Are you in the majority? That type of thing. Same thing went down in Austin. You still have to go through a process. You have to get votes and all that. Here at the local level, because of the way that we're set up, you've got myself and six other council members. We can make decisions quicker. We can meet quicker. We can tackle the issues that impact us right away. And so to me, that really is, it's a privilege and I consider it a perk. We don't get paid. It's all volunteer. So there's no perks in the sense of, oh, they must get a stipend at the end of the day. We don't get paid. It's purely volunteer. I don't have an entourage of security that follows me around. I sometimes I go to schools and they're like, hey, where's your black SUV? There's no black SUV. It's my pickup truck, you know? So the perk is the ability to, on a day-to-day basis, have an impact in your community.
See, I think you've got to have some kind of perk, though. Maybe you need to install this. Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking like the mayor's favorite Mexican restaurant in Keller and the mayor's favorite Italian restaurant in Keller, like a mayor's award or something. That way, at least, you know,
the restaurants are going to make sure to give you the absolute best food when you go out to eat.
No.
Like, you're going to have to get some creative, of them don't even know that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I do get a cool office. There's an office in Town Hall, and it's got a great view, and that's pretty neat. But
oh, I had a question. Who do you know the person who runs the social media account for the city of Keller on Facebook? Because they're hilarious.
She's awesome. Rachel Reynolds.
The responses she has, because some of the residents sometimes get a little bit picky about things. When Governor Abbott was coming to visit, I remember there was a thread on the city of Keller Facebook page. Lady was talking about, you know, safety protocols, and we were thinking, oh, what do you mean, like bodyguards and having police presence? But she was talking about masks and socially distancing and all this stuff. And the replies from the moderator on the city of Keller page were hilarious.
Wasn't that the one that they had to like start a new one because it was like so much of it on there, or
maybe
something like that?
I think crashed the old one.
Yeah, I think the wife said something about that. There was some other deal on the city of Keller's Facebook page, like, you know, now that you're done with the entertainment from that thread, you know, let's start a new one or something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
But no, she's awesome. She's been there for the city for a while, and she'll take, you know, a difficult situation or, you know, a tough item that's on social media and kind of make light of it in some sense. And so, but she does it still where it's professional and respectful. So
yeah, I remember there was one respondent, and I did kind of like click on the Facebook profile, and I think the second or third article she had was about you shouldn't say to your pet, specifically your dog, good boy or good girl, because it can cause gender dysphoria in your pet, that if they identify as a different gender, then you're actually damaging them by saying good boy or good girl.
Right.
And I thought, initially, I didn't want this woman to go to this meeting with Governor Abbott, but now I really want her to go there and ask the question just to see what's going to be asked here.
Right.
Because I did see, and I can't remember which county this was in the United States, probably just as well, but a lady actually had to stand up at a school board meeting and specifically ask if the rumor was true that they'd been putting kitty litter boxes into the toilets in the local high school to service the kids who were now identifying as cats.
Mm.
They denied it, but apparently there was a strong rumor
going around.
Nuts. Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for, you know, taking some time out of your day. Apparently, you're not going to get any kind of, you know, deal on lunch or anything. So I guess you're not really in a hurry to get that. But before we go, can you tell everybody how they can learn more about you, reach out to you, all that good stuff?
Sure. They can find me on social media. It's at Armin Mazzani TX or Mayor Mazzani on Facebook. Same thing on Twitter. And more than anything, I'm accessible. If people want to meet with me in person or via email, it's amazzani@cityofkeller.com. And again, it's just a privilege to serve our community. And thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back. And that will do it for this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. And it's still crazy kind of looking at this big TV. We now have this like big TV. This is the first time we've actually used it for one of our podcasts. Mm. But if you're watching this on YouTube, please go ahead and click that subscribe button. It does help us out, and we will catch you guys on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.